Next, we'll be interviewing Tom Starkey, so hold on.
This government had an idea and Parliament made it law. Seems like it's illegal to fight for the union anymore. And which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Set off to join the picket lines, but together we cannot fail. We got stopped by police at the county line. They said, go on, boys, or you'll go into jail. And which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Well, it's hard to explain to a crying child why her daddy won't go back. So the family suffer, but it hurts me more to hear a scab say, sod you, Jack. And which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Well, I'm bound to follow my conscience, and I'll do whatever I can. And it'll take much more than a union law to knock the fight out of a working man. And which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
Hi, welcome, Tom. How are you?
I'm really good tonight.
It's a pleasure to have you here. We'd like to welcome you to the basement, our illustrious studios here, our secret location, Freak Radio. Is this your first time?
My first time.
Yeah.
It's glad to be here. I'm honored to be here.
And we're just getting situated with the sound and all. We've got Freedom in the other side
Hello.
Of the studio. Hi, Freedom. Tom, when I invited you, I knew that you'd been active with the union, the UTU Local 23, which is behind the Metro Center, the bus drivers of Santa Cruz. You know, I didn't have a lot of time to talk to you beforehand, but what I did hear is that you were about ready to get into to when you were there and when you left, and then the 30th anniversary of the strike that the drivers had.
Yes.
So if you could start about what was your experience being part of the union?
Well,
and you were in management.
I started when I came to the bus company in 1979. The drivers didn't have a union yet, and so when I was hired, that was just all beginning to get organized, and the process of actually forming the union and then getting the first contract happened while I was an employee there, which was back in 1979 to 1981. And so the strike was happened in October of 1980, and it happened after our inability to negotiate an agreement with the transit district, and the result was that our members decided we would withhold our service and walk out, and we did a 18-day strike that was the first public employee strike in Santa Cruz County. So we were the first public employees to hold a strike. So it's kind of historic. And this last Saturday, October 9th, we held a 30th anniversary of the folks that helped organize that strike.
And so that did you see everybody that you used to work with there? Like, did they come to this?
Say again?
Did you see a lot of the people that you worked with at this?
Okay, yes. There were about 150 people that organized the first strike, and we had about 50 that showed up from that period. Overall, there was over 100 people that came to the event, a lot of current drivers of Local 23 and current employees of Metro that had been supporting our strike back then. So it was a pretty festive day on last Saturday.
How long was the strike?
It was 18 days, and so the buses did not roll that entire time. No, we only had four employees cross the picket line, and so it was a real successful strike. And it was very unique because we had a lot of our members were had a lot of skills at how you organize, and we had a lot of passenger support. We had a lot of public support. We really did a lot of very deep work in the community to get the community to support the strike.
That's because you organized back then, being the first public company to try to do that. And do you remember being part of the team that initiated wanting to do the strike? Or were you part of the small group that decided that?
Well, yeah, I was not an elected officer of Local 23, but I had an organizing background. I'd worked with Tom Hayden and the Campaign for Economic Democracy, and done some work with United Farm Workers, and so I was kind of interested in organizing, so this was stuff that was right up my alley.
I want to hear more about the organizing. We need organizing in this town.
Well, absolutely, and I think that was sort of the skill that I helped bring to it, was just how you pull off events and make things happen. And so myself and a couple others had that sort of skill, and that's what that's what we offered to the group. The thing I want to point out, though, is that there were so many back then, there were a lot of people that understood the need to stand up for our rights and to get a fair contract and to get the kind of working conditions resolved that happened in that first agreement. And that's what's made this strike pretty unique, was that we had a lot of people involved in it. I mean, it was not just a handful of folks. It was 30, 40, 50. It was hardcore activists who were really the core of making it work.
How'd you get that unity in the group? Because I know in a lot of political groups, everybody's got their own idea, and it's really hard to get people to come together.
I think that the unity came because we had the leaders that were sort of the officers and the leaders really were connected with the group. They understood who the members were. They knew them. There was a lot of camaraderie because we sort of all knew each other really well. And so I think some of that unity came because we really had good articulation of what our goals were and what we were trying to accomplish, and we were able to get a lot of our membership to get involved in it.
Were there any techniques in the meetings to keep it on track and stuff?
I know. I think, though, that we used basic skills of how you run a meeting and how you focus with an agenda and get people to keep their points short and to keep the meeting short and to keep folks' attention with what we were trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Use like a majority vote kind of thing?
Yes, absolutely. The structure of Local 23 is all structured around majority vote rules, and so we didn't have a whole lot of need to vote except when we got to our contract, but I think we worked a lot on consensus, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you see it differs today? When did you leave? Oh, we also have questions that people are sending in here. We're going to be asking. When were you gone from active organizing? How long has it been?
Well, I my period with Local 23 was from 1979 to 81, but then I started working for the Service Employees Union down in San Luis Obispo and Monterey counties, and I worked that for 4 years, and then I did another roughly 20 years of just being a union representative, a field representative. So the whole period's been really doing organizing, but in different capacities, different focuses.
I have this question that I was handed.
It's not a question.
Oh.
It's just a historical note.
Okay. Statement is that is...
I have to use my 10-speed bike to get down from Felton, my home in Felton, to the city schools where I was operations manager. So it was a lot of fun one way, downhill all the way on Highway 9.
Okay.
Yeah. But you have to go back up.
There you go. Written prompt to you. What do you miss about it?
Miss about doing organizing?
Yeah.
There's a real excitement for me when you can sit down with a group of people and find out what they're, to determine what the goal is for the group, for the individuals you're working with, and then to help them start taking the steps to accomplish the goal, to execute the plan that we're thinking about, or work on the contract we're trying to renew. Getting people involved in that and getting them to own it and to be the ones that drive it is exciting, and so I miss that, but I do miss that part. But I think that's what's the issue with the union movement now is I don't think we're doing enough work of actually getting members to own the direction of where the union needs to go and to get members to start understanding what their role in changing things is. I think there's too much in unions now of members just looking to the leader and saying, hey, you fix my problems for me. And I think that's one reason we're having the difficulties we're having in the labor movement. And so that's my excitement always has been to get members to be a part of the process and to own it and to move with it. And that's what was so exciting about the Local 23 strike is that's what happened. There's so many members that did that. And that's why it was such a good starting point for my career in the labor movement.
What prompted the strike?
Well, the strike was called because we could not get an agreement that reflected the kind of work rules the drivers wanted.
So it wasn't wages so much, it was working conditions.
It was the because there again, before UTU had the strike, they were a drivers association and they didn't have any agreement written down, and you'd have situations where you would work until midnight one night and then have to come back around the next morning at 6 a.m. and drive again, and you didn't have the kind of spread time between your rest
That's
periods.
Not safe for the public.
No,
really.
It wasn't, and there was issues of the extra board drivers that there were quite a few of in the early days. They would have time where they'd be at work that would be like 15 hours of time, but they'd only be getting paid for 6 or 7 hours because
they sit around and wait or something.
Yes, they brought us in the morning to work, and then there was this whole spread during the middle of the day, and then they'd use us in the afternoon. So we really worked on getting work rule improvements that really started addressing those. And that was actually the Local 23 the Local 23 contract. The first one was very, very it addressed a lot of those issues. The wages, as I remember, weren't where we wanted them to be, but we worked on benefits, health insurance, and those kind of things are what we did get in the first contract.
Mm-hmm. There was a second strike, or maybe a third one, in 2005.
Right.
And that was about wages, I think.
Yes, and that's after my time there, and so I really do not know those issues because I'd left very early on and did other union work. But yes, that 2005 strike, I think, was on wages.
Well, talk about your work with the SEIU in San Luis Obispo.
Well, the piece after I kind of got excited about being a union rep and working in the union movement from the UTU experience, I... started just doing organizing for SEIU, and there was a small group of public employees in San Luis Obispo that had been, they'd been in the union, but they'd been kind of neglected and not very low membership, and they were sort of not being paid attention to. And so my directive was to sort of build the membership up in the jurisdictions that SEIU had down in San Luis Obispo. And so that was they put me down there with no training, no background in contract negotiations. They just said, here, you start taking care of all that. So it was quite a challenge to figure that all out. But that's how I learned it, is by the seat of my pants. But the piece down there that I reflect back on that I think was very powerful was, if you all remember, in the 1982-3 period, I'm not exactly sure on my dates, but Diablo Canyon was being licensed to be fired up, to be used, to be go online. And there had still been a battle to try and stop Diablo Canyon from going forward. But the thing that that could have happened, if, and this is all about where I think the union movement needs to go, or where my vision of the union could have gone then, and where I still think that kind of vision still applies today. But the bus drivers, the school bus drivers, were written into the evacuation plan that Diablo Canyon had to have in place before they could go online. Mm-hmm. They had to have a way to get people out of the area. And they were using the bus drivers, the local school district bus drivers. And so that those bus drivers, if they had understood, one, the whole issue of nuclear power and what that's about, and realized that they could have said, could have really stepped in with, we're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. You're asking us to do that as public employees, but we're not going to risk our lives doing that. And that kind of, now, that kind of, I'm standing up and saying no, could have happened there had there been more awareness in the public, more understanding of issues among working people, more focus on what the power of public employees could have been in that process. And that's where I think I see the labor movement. I think we're having a hard time realizing our power because we're not having our members understanding how our democracy works, how our political process works, how our union process works, and so consequently we're not able to sort of empower people more through the kind of action that they could take through their labor union and through their political process.
Do you think people have turned off from believing that there's any way to get what they need, or are they being let down by the union leaders, or is it kind of a combination of things? Because, you know, unions have gotten kind of a bad rap, and they're also afraid to do anything that will, infringe on corporations, sort of the corporate domination over people's feeling that they have any power at all, there's, I think, only 2% are in unions.
I think it's not. It's 11 or 12% nationwide that are unionized. It's shrinking. It's sinking. It shrank in the last 10 years.
20%, I'm sorry.
It's shrinking in the private sector much worse than the public sector. Isn't that correct?
Yes. But even in the public sector, there's. I just seeing in the SEIU has had some public employee unions decertify from them recently because of the focus of SEIU being different than what the public employees want, and so they're sort of pulling away. But I think that for the most part, I think the dissatisfaction of labor has a lot to do with the members not paying attention to what's going on in their union. They're not understanding it. They're not involved in it. And consequently, then they sort of start building ideas about what it is or it isn't that isn't factual, isn't accurate. But I also think that there's been a lack of focus with public employee unions with trying to take care of what the members want taken mm-hmm. care of. There's somewhat more of a, well, we've got to be political, we've got to look on the national scene, we've got to, and that's all good, but you're leaving behind the local and public employees that say, hey, wait a minute, I want you to take care of my contract. I want you to take care of the work problems I have here at the workplace. I want you to be paying attention to the right kind of city council candidates that are going to support labor issues. And I think that there's not enough of that going on with public employee unions. And consequently, I think the members are getting disenfranchised more.
So you're saying that there's not enough local focus, that maybe the unions that they belong to are too large. And so what happens when they leave one of those unions? They just form another union or go shop around? Or
There's rules about that, but a lot of them just become, I know the Marin public employees, I noticed they were with SEIU and they've now become independent. They just are their own association, their own union, but they're not affiliated with mm-hmm. a bigger union, and they're not affiliated with the AFL-CIO. And those are all not good thing. I think you should be a part of the broader labor movement.
You're stronger when you're a part of a larger group,
yes.
Right? When they become small like that, what is management? Then management can bust them easier, right?
Yeah, if you're an organization of 3,000 as opposed to an organization of 180,000, yeah, it's a lot easier for management to start picking you apart by maybe challenging, pulling a strike on you, and having you pull into your bank account and take all your resources to take care of the strike, and thus you could end up being vulnerable because you're smaller, and so mm-hmm. it's never a good idea to do that, in my opinion. But I think it's a statement about something's wrong with the disconnect with the bigger labor organization that's mm-hmm. making people want to go away from them.
Now, Coral was telling me that you felt that some management that you dealt with, a lot of them were kind of like dirty tricks and stuff, weren't completely honest.
Well, yeah, and it's different in public employment. I mean, that my career, even with the bus driver union and then SEIU and operating engineers where I've worked, it's all been in the public sector. And so... And in the public sector, the political body controls the decisions of how you spend resources. And so it's not as corrupt or bad, or there's bad managers that the Board of Supervisors or the City Council say, we'll let you beat up the unions, you just get as far as you can go, fine, do that. And so there are jurisdictions that happens. But for the most part, it's still a political, in public sector labor, it's all about... The balance of power with the Board of Supervisors and the city councils, and that's what's interesting. You see a lot of city councils and Board of Supervisors that say they're pro labor, and mm-hmm. they act that way. But then the executives
makes that claim.
Yeah, the executives that run the county or the city still have their agenda with what they got to do to make contracts work, and they want to get take benefits away from employees and uh-huh. take pensions away, and that's but some of that is economics. That's what's different in the public sector is it's a set amount of money. It's coming from the tax base, and it's coming from the budgets that the board and the city councils pass, and that is, there's nothing hiding that. That's what the money is.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever feel like that they were being transparent enough, or was there any situation where...
No, in my experience in 25 years of representing public employees, a lot of cities and county and school districts were not transparent, and that's what caused a lot of the strife with labor, is that the members and the unions felt that, hey, you're hiding money, you're not being straight with us. You do have the ability to pay for that wage increase or to improve the benefit or help us with an economic problem, and you don't want to because you want to build a jail or build something with your capital money and not put it into people.
Yeah.
So but again, it all gets back to, and that's what in my experience in the public sector is that our members don't realize that the political body is what. The political body is where the control is.
Mm-hmm. And so that's who you negotiate against, basically.
Really, that, even though we negotiate their representative, the city council, the city manager, or the county executive, mm-hmm. we still are, their boss is the political body.
So part of your tactic then would be go directly to the public to put pressure on the political body, is that
yes.
correct?
Yes, and that's what a lot of you see labor unions do that now, and that's one of the tactics that is important to do, is to really work the political and to get the public to support what mm-hmm. public what the benefits are that public employees need. And mm-hmm. you know, and I don't know if you follow it now with the kind of pension erosions that are on the agenda for fire and police officers and regular general employees, but that's all coming down the pike with mm-hmm. erosion of those kind of benefits. And that I think that some of that is because the cities can't afford it, but some of it also is I think the citizens have to really weigh in with what they want in a benefit for public employees and really get a dialogue going and get ownership out there in the citizenry about what we want to do with how we want to take care of our public employees.
We have some questions that were emailed in, and you wanted to verify if they're all right. Should I just ask you?
Go for it.
All right. Our respondent, the person emailed, wants to know, are campus laboratories ticking time bombs of decrepit safety standards? I'm not sure if you could answer that. I don't see for Cal OSHA.
So the question is, are laboratories ticking time bombs? Are there safety issues in laboratories at the university, at the university level?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I wouldn't know. I would bet there are issues there mm-hmm. of safety. But I've never really worked in the university setting as far as what kind of issues might arise from laboratories, but I would imagine there are issues there. And I can't speak to that really.
Do you have an experience with OSHA work-related safety issues?
Yes, I've had a few dealings with OSHA and with issues that have come up through safety problems that OSHA's had to get involved in.
What stories can you tell about them, or what have we not yet learned from the work-related safety environment for improvement?
Well, in my experience in public sector, the safety issues that were kind of blatant, where there was really like a negligence on behalf of the employer regarding a safety issue, those were, I can't even think of one that was sort of an example of where they made the worker do something that was blatantly unsafe and therefore an injury resulted. Where I've had experience with OSHA has been with environmental issues, mold issues, mm-hmm. issues that are a little harder to get a direct aha, there's a problem here. And where I've had involvement with OSHA, they've been very responsive. It's still when it gets to the OSHA level of involvement, the employer's right in the middle of it as well. And in public sector, in my experience, the employers have invested a lot of money in risk management type of people that look to mitigate safety problems because of the liabilities it creates for the jurisdiction. So, but for the most part, when I've been involved with an OSHA issue, and it's really been around sort of molds, fumes in buses. We had a big issue when I was with the bus company on problems with fumes in the buses and whether it was affecting the health of the driver. And if we could identify a hazard, we could get it fixed. Because the employer, OSHA said, yeah, there is a problem, and the employer fixed it.
What would repairs on the buses themselves, mechanical repairs, have to do with what you dealt with? Did you have say so over, or what would that be listed under? Would that be OSHA too?
You mean mechanical issues with the buses?
Yeah.
Well, for a bus operator has to make sure they're riding a bus that's safe and that there's not issues with the safety of the vehicle, but that's their obligation as an operator to say, I won't drive this bus because the lights aren't working or the steering's not right or the air brakes are not correct, and that's the operator's responsibility to say, stop, I'm not driving that. But the repair of it is up to the to the transit district, and but it's the operator who operates the vehicle that has to make sure it's a safe vehicle to operate.
Nice. Yeah, I was remembering an example where a bus seat came apart and fell on a rider.
I wonder who that was.
I just was wondering.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a very good situation, but I'm sure there's been an instance or two where the seat has collapsed and a passenger's fallen. And yes, but generally those things should be caught by the operator and be repaired, but who knows? I'm sure something like that could happen.
Now there's a lot of biodiesel buses, I think, operating, maybe.
And I'm not sure on biodiesel. I mean, I think the transit district currently has their bus fleet is moving to LP gas, to natural gas.
Natural gas, excuse me.
And but I don't think they're doing biodiesel, but I'm not positive on that. But they are required, I think, to move away from pure diesel because it's not good for the environment.
Hmm. Do the bus drivers have any input in bus routes or how the business is run or anything like that, or is it all done by management?
Well, I can't speak to what's going on currently because I'm not in touch with that. Mm-hmm. But in my experience through kind of keeping an eye on the evolution of Local 23 and the contracts that they got after the initial strike contract, that they worked on more of those kind of rights where they had a involvement in the committee that they had a committee that worked with management on the routes and on the how the routes are sequenced for the driver so that it's better for the driver. And that the problems with the timing of the route to make sure that they can meet all the time points without mm-hmm. getting stressed out. And so early on, that was clearly a piece of it. And I think that that's generally the issue of more labor management involvement in the running of the organization is something that if you have a union that's really organized and really kind of deep with member involvement at all levels of, like, the committees of the district or the public jurisdiction, like a safety committee and a committee on, there's ways that the union can get more involved in the managing of the organization. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, that's one of the things that I don't think members want to do. But I think that's, to me, a place where there is a ripe... That's, to me, for my values and for my 25 years of experience, that's a place to go instead of money and benefits is going into getting a say in how the organizations run.
Being empowered. And so you say you were doing that with small communities within the union over different issues?
Well, I wasn't. In my career, I did a lot of small cities. I did small-sized school districts. I did county, Monterey County employees, Santa Cruz County employees, Santa Clara County managers. And in that experience, built big and small, some jurisdictions, there was more interest, like the school district in San Luis County. They got more interested in sort of issues around how the districts run. And got more involved in sort of speaking up with budget issues and, hey, we think you should put your money here and we don't think your decisions on these buses are good. We want to give you mm-hmm. ideas about how to buy better buses and the mechanics had better ideas about how to fix the buses. Mm-hmm. And so, but that was all because the members wanted to do that and because they told their union rep, me, that that's how they wanted me to spend my time. Mm-hmm. And that's the point I'm trying to make about where I think we are, a lot of members in unions just want money. I just want you to get money for me. I just mm-hmm. want you to get me a better raise.
It's all about
raise.
Me now.
Yeah, and not about what's better for
the community at large.
Yeah, and let's think about how, one, we get a better product out the door with or whatever it is we're doing as public employees, but that we have real ownership of that mm-hmm. among everybody.
And in the long run, it is in their interest to get more money because if it's spent wisely instead of some manager that doesn't really know what's going on because he's far removed from the actual operations, there'll be more money left to divide up with the union. So
Yes.
And it's better for the community to have more community support for a bus
yes.
system.
Absolutely. And that's part of, you know, I was on the Live Oak School Board for 2 years, and in that process of doing that from a policy-making process, I realized, you know, there could be a lot more if the employee unions got more involved in how the district's budget was mm-hmm. carved up. There possibly could be monies that are used in different ways. But it's that whole getting the political body, the governing body, and the managers and the unions to say, yeah, let's really work together and be collaborative about that and really be transparent. And there was some movement in the Live Oak School District to do that at one time. I don't think that's where it is now, but there was some time in the past they were trying to do that. But mm-hmm. I think that's the kind of vision of how you run a public organization. I think that's my vision of how it should mm-hmm. be anyway.
I guess on the other side, though, it does take time from the union members to do. They're not being paid for that while they're organizing around those issues.
That is an issue. That's one of the issues that needs to be fought for in their labor agreement, is to get paid time to be involved in the committees and in the other pieces of being in the participation in committees and other aspects of the management of the organization. But that's all again. Members have got to realize they can get anything. They can focus on those kind of rights if they want to, and strike over those instead of striking over wages and benefits.
That makes you look better to the community too. Otherwise, if you're just wages and benefit all the time, you just look greedy. But if you're actually trying to improve the service, then it looks like you're on the public side.
Yeah, and I think that's what public employees need to keep doing, is realizing they've got to keep providing value. Value added services, so the public sees, hey, we're doing something of value here, and then the public gets behind you, and then it's easier to work on the economic issues, mm-hmm. pension issues.
Mm-hmm. Do you have something, Carl?
So, does anyone have any other questions? Sorry. Tony?
I have a couple questions.
Okay, great.
Tom, I was personally involved in what I consider a major scandal when I was a building inspector, and SEIU represented us, as well as, were you SEIU?
Yes, building inspector for what?
For Santa Cruz County.
Yeah.
And Jerry
Zellhofer.
Yes, he went on to bigger and better things.
That's
about
right.
A year after this happened. But my buddy, Marty Williams, I'm going to mention his name.
I remember Marty Williams.
Oh,
he remembers me, too.
He's a beekeeper, a very good guy. He was a building inspector, though, and so he was my desk partner, so to speak.
I remember Marty.
He had a friend in the insurance department at the county who handed him a contract that we had with Blue Cross at a time when Blue Cross was raising the rates fantastically, and we made an analysis of the contract. The last page said that Blue Cross would take care of any extremely high cost, because we were such a good, healthy group of people that we wouldn't even have to get any kind of super coverage for crises. Were you aware about that?
I vaguely remember
okay,
this.
Okay, so here's what happened. I'm talking about personal involvement.
Yeah.
I did the analysis of it, and on the last page it said Blue Cross would take care of any overages, and you won't have to get this umbrella coverage that everybody gets.
Yes.
So Marty and I went to break into a union that was, to a meeting that was held between the SEIU, the county board of supervisors, and Blue Cross. All three entities were in that room. And as mm-hmm. we came, secretary must have been in there, because there was no one in the office. There was a closed door, and we heard Gary Patton laughing his head off about something. And we opened the door, and everything went quiet. And we had a letter that we handed to them which said, you guys are raising the retirees' insurance payments $225 per month to take care of two big cases that both of them happened to be in the planning department. Actually, in my
building inspection,
Ron Moore had two children who had massive problems.
Yeah.
They were born at Stanford, and they were going to be, it was going to cost millions to keep them alive. And my boss, Lou Bacigalupi, had bladder cancer. Well, this drove the costs of insurance up
sure.
for the county up tremendously. And we were never able to get them to honor the Blue Cross provision
agreement
agreement, right. The guy who was the risk manager who sold us the policy way back when was now the risk manager for Monterey, city or county of Monterey.
Yes.
And he was communicating with us behind, he was really feeling terrible. He was off the record telling us that he really screwed up.
Yeah.
That provision should never have been in the contract. So we went in there with that information. Nothing ever happened. We weren't smart enough to get any lawyers. We just saw the handwriting on the wall. Plus, we were employees.
Yes.
And we wanted to keep our jobs. So we backed off, and every single SEIU retiree and employee had greatly increased insurance costs from that point forward, when it should have been covered completely by Blue Cross at a time when they were not public. They were a
private entity,
nonprofit type HMO. Yes. So that's a really big scandal that hangs
for.
Oh, back I think
after Proposition 13,
early 80s,
I thought it was like 77, 78, something
like
that.
Yeah, I heard the story because I worked.
Anyway, there's a time you can identify when our insurance went up from like $30 a month to about $250 a month, just one big jump, because Gary Patton had a reputation of being, well, he was an ex-minister and he was a super moral guy, but he went along with that whole plan, and he's now on FM radio. If I would I'd be happy to have a conversation with him anytime.
Hey, Tom, your response?
Call in if he's listening.
Yeah, right.
Well, I don't know where what the union at the time, which was low, it was before SEIU, I think. It was still white.
Jerry
Zellhofer was the general manager.
He was definitely SEIU. And about a year later, there was a big program in the Civic Center, but he was moving on to bigger and better things. All the county employees were there to wish him good.
Yeah, well, that was later. That was more around the time I came in, because I came in around 1990.
It would be easy to find out the date. That was when the insurance company.
Is that's something that should have been picked up by the union at the time and taken forward to say, wait a minute, we got something going on here.
It was collusion.
Yeah.
It was collusion.
And the collusion has to do with you got to get the leaders in there that aren't doing that.
I still have a copy of the contract.
Yeah. And it's the strategy of how you as members that find these kind of problems, get them to the attention of the union, and if the union doesn't address them, then you take action to try and sort of get those kind of leaders not involved in the union anymore. And again, some of in my experience is that I've been on the side with where members have thought we've missed something and we should be doing something different. Some of it is we don't have our facts correct, and that's getting the right set of facts is what has to first happen, and make sure we're absolutely accurate that this contract provided for something that the county didn't want to recognize. But then it's really, that gets back to where you have to, members have to be paying attention enough, more than just two or three, so that you can really be organizing a sort of a resistance to the leaders that are saying, we don't want to listen to you.
Hmm. Sounds somewhat like corruption. So you have these big contracts. How do you make sure that you've got all the I's dotted and the T's crossed? Do you use lawyers? And
well, in my experience, we usually had a lawyer that works with these kind of contracts, look at it before, look at the drafts, make sure we've got things correct. Some of the more complicated stuff for sure, but some of the, you know, like a lot of the language that's in contracts where I wrote the original language, I know what its intent was, mm-hmm. and so I can very well feel comfortable with what the language is that we've agreed to and know that that's fine. But there's, in this area of insurance stuff, it can get very, you know, very unclear and dicey with what it means, and that's why, yes, we use lawyers to do that. But you can make mistakes, and I made them. I absolutely made mistakes in my 25 years with agreeing to something that ended up not being the right... What you thought it was, and ended up having problems from it. So it does happen. But again, as that's part of the whole piece with having good bargaining committees that are helping you and that have good, that so you put more minds on this and say, okay, let's have 7 or 8 or 10 people look at this and say, is this all what, mm-hmm. is this what we said we agreed to? And some of the mistakes I made was when I wasn't getting any help from anybody.
Yeah, well, that's another advantage to being with a large organization, because they've got more lawyers and stuff.
More resources. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So you said you did some work with Tom Hayden. What was that?
Well, yeah. I was his when he ran for the United States Senate in 1976. I was the campaign coordinator here in Santa Cruz County, and so I helped. We got a campaign organized here, and we ran a really solid effort here in this county. Then this ended up being one of the four counties statewide that he won outright: Yolo, Santa Cruz, Marin, and San Francisco. So that was my claim to fame. With sort of, he got beat every other county in the state, but mm-hmm. Santa Cruz came through for him.
Well, that's because we're so cool here.
That's right. And that was in 1976. And then from
there, we're cooler.
Yes. And from there, he formed the California Campaign for Economic Democracy. And that came out of his Senate run, and I was involved in helping found that.
Have you done any more political stuff since then?
Oh, yeah. I've done a lot of political things through the union movement. Mm-hmm. I mean,
candidates and stuff?
Yes, yes. A lot of political campaigns, a lot of political candidates, city, county, my own personal, I just helped Live Oak School District with their bond campaign just 2 years ago. So that was the last sort of thing I did politically. But yes, I've done quite a few campaigns. I've walked, during my Hayden career, I think I walked precincts in 16 counties in California where we were running people, or there were people connected to the Campaign for Economic Democracy. So I've been all over the state walking precincts.
What kind of techniques do you use in a political campaign?
Just like any organizing thing, you get an organizing plan of how you're going to, accomplish your goal. And for me, it's a lot of detail with, this is the event. What are all the details need to happen? I always move backwards from the election going backwards and line out all the significant things we need to be doing, and then what the detail of each of those things is, and getting somebody to be responsible for them, and mm-hmm. getting a group to support that. And so it's organized, it's detailed. Mm-hmm.
It's like project management.
In a way, but it's thinking through all of the pieces of it and making sure you understand how you got to accomplish that through...
Did you call all the voters at that time? That long ago, did you call every voter in the county?
Oh, no.
That's no. What they do now.
But we in the Hayden campaign...
With computers.
We walked quite a few precincts in the city.
Door to door, you mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we targeted them and...
Find out if they're for or against
you.
Yeah,
identified who was supporting them and made sure we... And then got them out to vote.
On the day of the election, you get them out to vote. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
How about the UNRRA campaign? I was in the
UNRRA
campaign, did you?
Yeah. No, that's before my time. I remember the guy, but that I didn't do anything. I think my mother was more of a...
You're not younger than I am, are you?
Yeah, but Jess UNRRA was more my mother's era. She liked him.
Money is the mother's milk of politics.
Yeah, I think that's a Jess UNRRA quote, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
During this lull, I'll just tell you, I wrote 5 political songs for UNRRA, and one of them was a takeoff on the song that started the program. It was "Which Side Are You On?"
Good.
An advertising man is wonderful. He earns his money for sure. He can take a man like Reagan and sell him to the poor. Oh, which side are you on?
Which side are you on?
Which side are you on? Great God! Which side are you on?
Good job. I like that.
And Reagan was kind of the enemy of the unions because he broke those air traffic controllers. And did that change things in the 80s?
My neighbor. Yes.
Yes. No, that was a period of real real galvanizing. My recollection is that galvanized a lot of people to sort of work in unions and to be a part of the union movement. So it really... I think it did more to galvanize the labor movement. It certainly was a battle, and we got beat up. I mean, the air traffic controller strike was a big issue, mm-hmm. but it's it certainly got a lot of people focused on the need to get organized in a union. And I think public employee unions got stronger in that period.
Mm-hmm.
There was a question about air traffic controller strikes. I'll find it in a few minutes. Yeah. My neighbor is a Teamster. Drove 18, I don't know how long, I'd say 40 years. Drove, he's an independent trucker, and owner-operator, and was saying how Reagan promised to meet all the union members, you know, at a certain spot and let them down, and he'll never forget it. Yeah. never forget it.
Never trust a Republican.
Republicans are not friends of labor.
Look what happened with Bush. Come on.
Republicans are not friends of labor.
No, they hate labor.
Yeah. They're connected to the man.
I'd like to, I hope you end the program on a positive note. I'm hearing the guys on Progressive Talk Radio, Tom Hartman, the other day said, the unions are our last hope at recovering and rescuing our democracy. That's it. We have to start burgeoning again and take back the country.
Yes. Well, I've always been an optimist, and I've had, that's just a part of who I am, and I'm proud of that. And part of that optimism is that, yes, I do think labor, the institution of labor is so rooted in our democracy that I believe it will come back. It will get strong again. Mm-hmm. I am concerned that the generation below me, and I'm a baby boomer, and my generation, my parents were more involved in labor unions. Not mine personally, but that generation was very involved in labor.
The 30s and stuff.
Yes. And then there was activism out of the 60s and 70s, like the UTU strike, where people got involved in unions. But then you take it down another generation, and there's not that level of involvement or understanding or awareness. And that's what worries me. And that's why people that are in the labor movement now, people that are still working every day and carry a union card, and that they ought to be very proud of that, and they ought to be talking to their children about that, and they ought to be really making an effort to educate the generation below them about the value of unions, because that's how it's going to survive here. And I think that employers, the man's always going to be doing bad things to the worker.
If he
can get away with it. And so it's going to, and so that institution of labor is there. I mean, they're as democratic as any institution in this country. The structure's there. I mean, the Teamsters and other unions have had constitutions and bylaws that have been changed to be corrupt, and that all has to be fixed by members. But again, it all gets back to, hey, you got to be going, and if you're a member and carry a union card or a member of a union, you've got to make sure that you're understanding what's going on in your union.
You can be informed and involved.
Be informed and involved. And so that's why they get corrupt, is people aren't doing that. Mm-hmm. But a healthy union, and there are a lot of them out there. I mean, I think overall SEIU is a really healthy organization. I mean, I think as far as it's doing the right kind of things with where it's got to be organizing. But those unions, I think, will bring another generation of people along. And I mean, if you look at who they're organizing, you're organizing immigrant workers that have never had any say, and then their first job is a $10 an hour, $8 an hour job, and then they get unionized, and that empowers them, and then that changes them, and then their kids see that. And so I think there is real potential, but it's all involved with, you got to keep growing it and organizing it, and that's more important.
The unions are a powerful catalyst for social change for several decades.
Absolutely.
Especially when you combine, like, say, students and workers together, that's always a powerful combination politically.
Yes, it is.
Another historical note. I have a real good friend, the late Morton McGarry, who started the AFT union in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And if you wore an AFT button, American Federation of Teachers button, you were fired as a teacher.
That's right.
Back in San Diego. And he and another guy, Jack Schultz, started it, and they did it on issues, not on money. When there were $10,000 worth of desks ordered, they went to a warehouse and brought wooden desks that were brand new, that were in storage. So they proved that you didn't have to buy the new desk, that sort of thing. But it took about 10 years before it was safe for them to come out in the open.
Yeah. Yep.
Is there still an AFT?
So, yes, there's absolutely still AFT. It's part of the AFL-CIO. We have our teachers here in Santa Cruz and Pajaro Valley are AFT.
How about the private sector? Is there, could you unionize, say, the retail shops on Pacific or the amusement park, things like that? Because those are the people that are making very low wages.
Well, right. That, that's where it gets, you know, it, that's, those attempts I'm sure have been made.
There are unions for waiters, waitresses, hotel, motel.
Yes, the hotel restaurant employees union. It represents a lot of, not a lot of workers in this town. This is pretty much still a hard town to break in and be solid union.
But, yeah, I know
but,
that.
Why is that?
I know.
Because I think the culture here is one of, we have the beach, we have the beautiful environment, so we don't need a union. I mean, that's sort of what I heard.
You know, yeah, that's what Noah's Bakery used to think.
Yeah, they say, we provide you this beautiful
they provide
ocean
the beach.
And bay and sand.
Not
and
God,
so,
but
so yeah, yeah, yeah. And so because of all that, you don't need to have a union. And I also think there's a...
Well, don't you need a union in order to get the money to pay for the rent to live in this town?
Yeah, yeah. So you know, we heard a lot of that in our days in the county organizing, the county government employees with...
Well, I mean, the government employees make good money.
Yes, but...
But you know, in the private sector, you don't make good money in Santa Cruz unless you're, like, you know, some super in-demand kind of...
Yes, but in the private sector, a lot of it's economics. I mean, a small company, 5 employees, 8 employees, the ability to make that work economically for the employer, it's a tough one. I mean, when you... And that's where this is all, like... You know, some like you know Jim Cochran, who has Swanton Berry Farm. Mm-hmm. He does strawberries. He's the only UFW strawberry worker farmer. He's the only farmer that has got a contract with the UFW for his strawberry workers, and he has to charge more for those berries. If you look at what he charges mm-hmm. versus what other people charge, because he has more costs that he has because of providing the benefits. But he's a guy that's very committed to that, and so he makes it work economically. And you know, I'm sure that he probably doesn't make the profits that a non-union strawberry grower does. He probably makes way less profit, but it's a value thing for him, and that's mm-hmm. why he's a... Jim is in our community, a guy that should be really honored for providing a business that's a unionized mm-hmm. Business for farm workers that produce strawberries.
He have better, more loyal employees and less turnover.
I'm sure he has a really solid group of workers there because they realize, hey, you've taken care of us, we're going to take care of you.
Mm-hmm. In the long run, everybody's benefits more.
That's the bottom line, is that, you know, that's all a union, an employer that realizes we should have a union contract here. And I in my years with the Operating Engineers Union, you know, and I didn't work on the construction side of that union. I worked in the public employee side. But on the construction side, I could very well see that there were some employers that realized, I'm going to stay union and provide union benefits for my equipment operators because it makes sense, and I'm going to take care of them, and then they're going to take care of me. And that's going to make my business continue to mm-hmm. flourish. And so some employers get it, and but I think it all gets down to mm-hmm. whether I'm going to be a guy that just wants the bottom line and the wants more and more and more for myself and wants to step on people to do that, then those are the kind of people that are not going to support having union benefits.
That's kind of what's happening in our country. I mean, a lot of union jobs are going overseas where there are no unions, and it's the cost of living is cheaper, so you just, you know, pay someone hardly anything.
Yep, that's right.
Heard you on the radio.
Uh-huh. And
Dolores Huerta.
This is the Free the Land Show. You're listening to Tom Starkey. We also had Tony Cuspa.
Well,
we have a few more minutes, and we're going to be wrapping up the show. So if anyone has any last-minute thoughts...
Now's the time to call.
Now's the time. And
the number here is...
You can call and pledge your support to... can donate to our show in particular if you like, or to the station at P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz 95061. Thanks to all who have donated
mm-hmm.
free radio.
You can put on there Free the Land, and then you can put like what you'd like to hear more, maybe music, interview, or something like that, and we'll take a look at it.
Leave comments at 427-4523 on the voicemail as well. Mm.
And to call in here is 427-3772. We have maybe a few more minutes.
Thanks to the callers who did call in with their questions. All I have is a couple of questions that are... is a drunk driver threat and bus collisions better or worse? Let me get this call first. can think about that. I have green radio. Okay. Put you on here.
Put the caller on.
Yeah.
So you can get right on the air when you call into our show.
Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay. What would you like to ask, caller?
Whichever one of these is most interesting to talk about. So is the drunk driver threat and bus collisions getting better or worse? Because there was a big Carrollton, Kentucky bus collision in 1988 that was due to a drunk driver. Mm. And then maybe are there still really hazardous intersections in this county? Or the Dartmouth students have a big green bus, and the new electric bus from Germany touring California. Are electric buses sustainable for Santa Cruz County, maybe?
I'm kind of interested in that because I don't like petroleum. Has that ever been an issue in any union talks you had? Or?
Well, back when I was with UTU, we were still running diesel buses, so that has all evolved in the last 5 or 6 years. So I don't know what talks have been present. I know that in my being around buses in all of my work in the last 10 years, I don't know that there's a lot of potential for electric buses in this county because of not having the technology to keep them charged up, and I don't think mm-hmm. that's been it doesn't seem to be the direction they're going in with. I think there's zero emission through hydrogen, and there's some other technologies that they're developing for buses, but I don't think electric bus in Santa Cruz is something that has been considered because of the infrastructure it needs to support it.
Thank you, caller. Anything else?
That's it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So,
thanks for listening.
We're talking about it in terms of political change. Now, back in the 30s and stuff, there was a strong anarchist element in the unions that I don't think there are today. Anarchism is more of a cultural art kind of thing. There isn't so much union involvement. What was your experience, say, in the 70s, 80s? Were there still some anarchists around then?
Well, yeah, I remember an element of that was around Santa Cruz. I don't think it was in my experience with the bus strike. I think we were all pretty focused on what we needed to do, and we weren't sort of working with a group of our membership that was sort of taking an anarchist kind of approach. But I think that in my years being in the labor movement as a public employee representative, there's certainly been an anarchist popping up here and there that was sort of, you could tell they were sort of, I don't want to do any of this. I don't think we should be sort of not thinking about this kind of organization. We should be way over here with the ideas. And so, but it was never like a big group within the membership that was sort of saying we should really not be organized and sort of go our own ways kind of. I don't remember that it was any big group, but there were a few people that were definitely kind of in that philosophy.
How about communists or socialists?
Oh yeah, that's
there's more of those.
Definitely, yeah, that's always a part of the labor movement.
Were you part of helping to get new laws passed? Here's one I'm reading right now: yield for a bus, and you'll help traffic go.
Well, I wasn't part of that, but I know. I don't know what the history of the union in Santa Cruz was, but I know that was a piece that I'm sure the labor union supported. And there are other transit unions. Amalgamated Transit Union represents the VTA bus drivers and the Transit Workers Union in San Francisco. And those unions, I'm sure, wanted to get that yield law passed. And it's if you notice on a bus, it has a triangle and it goes on and it says yield, and what that's asking the motorist behind to do is to let the bus go so that the bus can get out into traffic and not be stopped and losing its schedule and just getting delayed more and more. So yes, I'm sure unions help with that. I'm not sure what happened here in Santa Cruz on that, but that was something that was supposed to be helpful for the bus operator to keep on schedule.
And yeah, because I know a lot of drivers that They're supposed to let buses go and not pass them, well, especially when they're stopped, of course.
Yep.
And so do you ride the bus, Tom?
Yes, I do. I don't ride it all the time, but I do ride it. I do hop on it for rides into town on occasion and quick pieces up the if I want to go up the university, I'll get a bus up to the university. And
that's much wiser anyway.
I still know the system pretty well.
So you worked with schools, too? Is there a difference between school bus unions and regular bus unions?
Yes, because bus unions that represent, the transit district here is an independent entity, and so it's more of a transit-focused organization, whereas school bus drivers are part of the school district, and so they sometimes put the bus drivers in with the mechanics and the custodians and the secretaries. They kind of put it into one kind of group. It's certainly the law, the collective bargaining law for school employees could have allowed the members to take their bus group and be a union of just a bus union to represent just that small group, and that has happened. But again, that carves out a smaller little piece and
less bargaining power,
maybe potentially less bargaining. But for the most part, in school districts where there's bus drivers, they're usually a part of what they call the classified employees.
You worked with school bus unions?
Yes.
So is that more difficult when there's competing, because the secretary is going to have a different agenda than the bus drivers and the mechanics?
Yeah, that's part of the problem. That's always the art of working collectively, is you have to carve out the group that's big enough. And so a classified group within a school organization is custodians, clerical aides, mechanics, bus operators, gardeners, and it's how you work to have the broadest group that can still be big enough to really bargain with more power. And so then when you have that bigger group, you have to learn to support the bus operators' issues, support the gardeners' issues, support the custodians' issues, and that's all part of unionism, and that's all part of not being about me, but being about, hey, I'll stand up for the custodian this time and know
solidarity,
and know that next time in the next contract, that custodian will stand up for my bus driver issue.
Because that's very similar to leftist politics, because everybody's got their own agenda. Some are environmentalists or, ideology, political ideology and all. How do you bring them together to become, because right now in Santa Cruz especially, they're all split up in all these different areas and they're very ineffective politically as far as I can see. How would you bring them together if you were organizing all the political groups instead of, say, a union? What kind of tactics would you use or strategies?
Well, I think that that's all about, and in my years doing political work, one thing that we did during the Hayden period was work at trying to build coalitions of the left political groups and work in a broader coalition. And what I found in trying to do it in Santa Cruz was that we needed to support each other and understand each other and know, sort of make sure we weren't duplicating, or where one organization was doing the same thing as another one and trying to minimize that. And then focusing on how we can work on common issues, and where we have like the rent control issue, and getting as many progressive groups to work on that rent control issue. And so a lot of my recollection from that was sort of getting to understand what everybody does, getting each other talking to each other, and then finding, can we all work on this common piece together?
So you need to meet at some point, right, to find out what everybody's working on. How do you do that?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think you got to be talking and working together more on issues. And, I've been a little bit out of the Democratic Party politics in Santa Cruz, and so I don't know sort of what it's like now. But I know back when I was working with that, there's a lot of getting people to understand what you're about, and and then also how you can get, okay, we have this problem of rent control in Santa Cruz, and how do you want to help us support that? Because, that was a big issue that I worked on back.
Mm-hmm. It's still not, it's very difficult because there's so many independent landlords or something.
Yeah, but it was how we could get everybody to sort of focus on doing the battle against the landlords, because they are a big force.
And they're pretty well united, I guess, because there's money involved. So
that's right. And it's, but it was, we're trying to get folks to realize, do you want to help us? These are the issues we all need to support. Do you want to help do that? And how do we do that in an organized fashion? And, you know, and it's somewhat letting go of your own ego, your own issues within your identity, within your own organization, and saying, I'll work for the greater good, so I'll let this other organization take the front end piece and be the kind of the spokesperson for it. And, you know, it's that sort of coalition work that I think we don't do enough of, I don't think.
I guess you need to inspire people to put someone else's interests ahead of their own.
Yeah.
You know, we could use that at with the free radio disc jockeys, too. Not that many people even go to the meetings.
Yes.
I guess it's because meetings are boring. How do you keep the meetings from being boring?
Well, one thing is you stay to the business and stay with the agenda, get the group that's coming to the meeting to agree what the agenda is, mm-hmm. agree to the meeting time, and we're going to go for an hour, and then run through it and stay on it and be done in an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of discipline.
Does like food help or entertainment? Or
yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Food always helps.
As I know Franklin, you know, Benjamin Franklin, you know, he was joined like 20 different banquet groups. You know? I mean, 200. Yeah, that is, you got to interconnect with people at some point. You know, it just doesn't happen that much in this time.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Tom. Well, I think we're at the end of the night. Our next show is going to be Fun in the Oven.
Oh, good. Well,
10 o'clock.
DJ Brian.
I certainly am honored to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity, and it's nice to be a part of this organization. Mm-hmm. I've heard about it and I've listened to you, but
you've just committed a federal crime.
But now I'm sitting at the heart of it all, and it's kind of nice being here. So I'm honored to be able to be a part of the program tonight.
Thanks, Tom.
Like to hear about the union stuff. You just don't hear about it that much anymore.
I'll gladly come back again.
Yeah.
All right. We'll get you on here and debate with the communists.
Get more people who are involved want to be involved with the unions.
I guess we can put a song on or something and play Joe Hill. That's appropriate.
That's good. I liked your songs to put on at the beginning. That was real good choices.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Black, as hard as they were long. In the song.